Good day, everyone, and welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange conference call. Today's call is being recorded. Now for introductions, I would like to turn the call over to Ms. Christy Snyder. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you, Sheila, and welcome everyone to WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is avoiding problems through proper setup of CICS and Java. During the presentation, all lines will be muted. After the presentation, I will ask you to respond to a few quick polling questions. After that, the lines will open for a question and answer session. Today's presenter is Shayla Robinson, Staff Software Engineer, CICS Level 2 Technical Support Representative. Shayla Robinson joined IBM in July 1997 as a customer support representative for CICS. Over the years, she has acquired experience providing assistance to customers on various problems. In recent years, she has begun focusing on the Java programming language and its introduction into CICS. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Shayla. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Christy. First again, I'd like to say welcome, and we'll go ahead and get started. Slide number 2, which is the agenda. And basically, the goal of this session is to review the basic steps that are needed in order to set up CICS for Java and JKIC support. And we'll also take a brief look at how to set up CICS as an EJB server. If we take a look at slide number 3, there are quite a few tasks that you have to perform in order to set up Java and JKIC support within CICS. Some of the things you need to do is configure and enable a JVM within the region. You need to make the JKIC classes available for compilation and compile those classes. You also need to prepare the Java runtime environment. And then after verifying that those steps have been taken, you should be able to execute any of the Java transactions. Within this presentation, we assume that CICS Transaction Server, the IBM Java SDK for ZOS, Unix System Services, as well as Language Environment 370 are all set up and configured. In bullet number 2, you see a note that specifies you need to verify LE is set up correctly. Language environment is a prerequisite for CICS JVM programs, but unlike other languages, JVM programs do not require the KIX LE interface. So if you need to run any JVM programs that utilize the LE support using the MVS services, but you don't need any of the KIX LE support, you need to make sure that SKI run is included in either the StepLive or the MVS link list. If you need to run with the JVM as well as with the KIX LE support, in addition to putting SKI run in the StepLive or link list, you must also put SKI KIX followed by SKI run within the DFH RPL. On slide number 5, the next step you must do is to give KIX access to the HFS structures and subdirectories in the files in order to create the JVM. You must first assign a Unix System Services user ID, a group ID, and a home directory for the KIX region user. You must then grant this KIX region user ID read and execute access to various directories. The first is the installation where your CICS is installed, the directory where your CICS is installed, the directory where the Java SDK is installed, and a few of the other directories and files, the various locations where your class paths are installed, for example, the class path and shareable application class path, the trusted middleware class path, and the live path. It must have access to the location where your JVM profiles and property files are located. And if you're using any of the EJB support, it must also have access to where your shelf and DJAR directories are located. You must also grant KIX read, write, and execute access to the KIX working directory, which is used for any input, output, and any JVM-related messages, and to the user output class, which is used to redirect standard out and standard error from the JVM. We will skip slide number 6, which is just some notes for your reference, and take a look at slide number 7. The next thing you need to do is define the HFS directory for the KIX region. When CICS is installed, an HFS structure is created automatically under the /user/LPP directory, which sort of resembles the top HSS structure you see in the picture. And it's usually recommended that you should create a new HFS structure under the KIX region user ID's home directory, and that'll sort of resemble the bottom diagram. And there are three main directories that you need to include within the KIX region user ID's home directory. The first is the KIX working directory, which is usually called workdir. You'll need to make that directory within the HFS structure. The next two directories that you can copy from the KIX installation directory is the JVM profile, JVM profiles, and the JVM system properties files called props. You can copy those over from where they are installed within your KIX installation. And there are a few optional directories. The main one that you might want to include is the samples directory, which supplies any of the KIX supplied samples if you'd like to test those out. The lib directory for any additional libraries, and the docs directory for any documents that you might like to take a look at. On slide 9, CICS provides sample property files and profiles for the JVM. There are 5 in total. The first DFH JVM CC and its associated property file is used to configure the master JVM if you're using the shared class cache. DFH JVM CD and its property file is used for any KIX supplied system programs. DFH JVM PC and its associated property file is used to configure any of your worker JVMs. The default profile, DFH JVM PR, and its associated property file is used to configure any standalone resettable JVMs. And DFH JVM PS and its property file is used to configure any standalone single-use JVM. DFH JVM PR, the default, is used if a Java program is defined as using a JVM, but no profile is specified. It is also used for the KIX sample program. DFH JVM CD is used by KIX-defined programs, which include the default request processor program and the program CICS uses to publish and retract the deployed JAR files. So DFH JVM PR and DFH JVM CD, along with their associated property files, must always be made available to CICS. Slide 11. On slide 11, you see that the class path determines how the class is loaded by the JVM, where it is stored, and how it is treated. There are 4 different places where you can actually specify the classes that you would like to execute. The first is the library path, which is usually for any native C DLLs, which usually end in a .so suffix within the HFS directory. And these are added via the live path parameter within the JVM profile. The second location is the trusted middleware class path, which is for any classes that you trust to manage their own state across any JVM resets. These are added via the TM prefix and the TM suffix option in the JVM profile, and you can specify things such as the DB2 supplied JDBC drivers. The third path is the shareable application class path, which is for any shared or cached classes, and this is added using the JVM properties file, and the parameter is ibm.jvm.shareable.application.class.path. This is if you want to use the shared class cache. If the JVM is using the shared class cache, then the classes will be loaded from the shared class cache. If the JVM is running in resettable mode and is not currently using the shared class cache, the classes will be cached in the JVM and will be reinitialized upon each reset. If the JVM is running in continuous mode and it's not using the shared class cache, the classes will be cached in the JVM and they will be kept intact across the JVM reuses. The fourth location is the standard class path, which is for any non-shared classes that you may require, and this is specified via the class path option in the JVM profile. For the best performance, you should use the shareable application class path for any of the application classes that you want to be cached. Slide 13, please. The next step you must do is to tailor the JVM profile. The JVM is started by the KIX Java launcher, which uses a set of options known as the JVM profile. So after you've set up the HFS directories and files, you've granted KICS access to them, you need to tailor the JVM profile that your application will be using. In this example, we're using the default profile, DSH-JVM-PR. To point to this profile, you specify JVM profile dir within the SIT, and that specifies the location of the JVM profile you'd want to use. And the JVM profile contains any environment variables that are used by CICS to control the JVM behavior. And the different things that you can specify within this profile is the program location, such as the live path, the class path, if you're using the trusted middleware class path, TM prefix or TM suffix, any of the KICS options, such as the working directory, the KICS installation directory, class cache equals yes or no if you're going to be using the shared class cache, reuse mode, and JVM props, which will point to the JVM properties file. And there are also some additional Java non-standard options that you can specify, which are things such as the SMX and SMX heap storage setting parameters. Slide 14, please. The next thing you must edit is the system properties file. Each JVM profile references a JVM properties file, which is basically just another HFS text file. And this file contains the JVM and application parameters and values that are passed to the JVM during initialization, and it constructs the system properties that would be within that environment. Again, the JVM props profile option is how you specify the location, which properties file that you will be using. And within this properties file, you can specify things such as the shareable class paths, which are programs loaded at JVM initialization time, but will not be removed at program termination time. If you're using any of the EJB support, you can specify things such as the JNDI provider, the JDBC driver, or J2EE security options. If you'd like to log any of the events, such as unresettable events or cross-heap events, you can specify and enable those settings within the properties file. And there are also some JVM debug options that you can specify within the properties file as well if you want to add additional debug information to your environment. Slide 16, please. If you'd like to use the shared class cache, you first need to make and check and make sure that the semaphore options within the BPX PRM member of the PARM Live is set correctly. The master JVM uses a single ID and it requests a set of 32 semaphores. So if you don't have the number that's specified for MMIDS and MNSEMS, you can run into problems there. And within the KICS-SIT parameters, there are three parameters that you must specify in order to utilize the shared class cache. The first is JVMCC profile, which points to the profile that you'll be using for the master JVM, which by default is DSH-JVMCC. The second parameter is JVMCC size, which specifies the size of the shared class cache to be used. This can be anywhere from 1 megabyte to 2,047 megabytes. And the third parameter is JVMCC start, which determines whether the shared class cache is started during KICS initialization or not. Slide 17, please. Next, you need to tailor the KICS startup JCL. You need to make sure that your KICS region size is large enough to allow for all of the heap and stack storage requirements, along with any LE and Java code and any LE internal control blocks. You need to make sure that you have SCFJ off specified within the step live. This contains the SJ domain components as well as the KICS Java launcher code. If you're running KICS 2.2, just as a side note, you must specify a DD statement for DSHJVM. And within the SIT parameters, there are a few parameters that you can specify. The first is max JVM TCBs, which limits the number of J8 and J9 TCBs in the pool. By default, this is set to 5. If you would like to utilize the shared class cache, you have those three parameters, JVMCC size, JVMCC start, and JVMCC profile. But the main option that you must specify is JVM Profile DIR, which specifies the HFS location for your JVM profiles. Slide 19, please. Now you're ready to set up the program definition for the JVM application you would like to run, and this is for non-EJB applications. And the main things that you have to specify on the program definition is the execution key, if you're going to run in KIX key or user key. The JVM equals yes or no to specify that it will be running in a JVM. JVM class, which is the class name qualified by the package name you would like to run. In this case, it's examples.helloworld.helloworld. And you must also specify JVM profile, which is the name of the profile in the HFS directory that should be used for this program. Slide 20, please. By this time, you have majority of the setup completed for your system. There are a few things that you may want to verify within the HFS structure. There are actually three environment variables that you may need to alter. The first is the path variable, which is the Unix System Services search path. The second is the KIX underscore home parameter, which is the directory where your CICS transaction server is installed. The third parameter is the Java underscore home directory, which is where the Java SDK is installed. And depending on how you set up your region, if you're using the HFS structure that's installed by CICS, or if you're using a KIX region user ID and however many KIX region user IDs you have within the structure, you may need to set these via either the .profile or the profile.kix file in order for them to be active for your particular region user ID. Slide 21, please. The next step is to build the Java sample applications or any user applications that you would like to run. In this case, we'll be using the Java samples, so you'll first need to change to the samples/dfjcics directory. Now, within this directory, you could issue the command to either compile all of the samples or compile a specific one. An output you receive should look similar to what you see in the third bullet down. If there are any errors, it will be within this section as well, and you have to figure out what those errors were. If the compilation returns a zero return code, then the next step you need to do is to install the CICS resource definitions. And these are located in the group DFH$JVM. And once you have that installed, you should be able to run any of the Java transactions, such as JHE1 for Hello World or JHE2 for Hello KIX World. And at this point, if those transactions run successfully, you now have successfully created a CICS region that includes support for any Java and JKIX applications. On slide 22, please. Assuming all the prior steps were done correctly and successfully, we will now take a look at how to set up CICS as an EJB server. To configure the EJB server, you must be able to create the shelf directory structure, define the DFH EJDIR and DFH EJOS vSIM files, create the JVM initialization variables in the KIX startup JCL, create and install any of the resource definitions required, install the RMEB if you'll be using that, and then verify the setup. You can use the installation verification procedure for that. We assume that you already have a name server configured and set up within this region. There are many components that make up a KIX EJB server, such as the TCP/IP listener, the request receiver task, request models, request streams, the request stream directory, the request processor task, the EJB container, the object store, any Corbis servers, of course the JVM, and any deployed jar files. Slide 23, please. This slide shows how all those components fit together. The TCP/IP listener passes the request to the request receiver for analysis. The request receiver analyzes the request and matches it against any request models. The request model determines the CICS TRAN ID under which to run the request processor task. The request processor receives the request stream and locates the object identified by the request. The DJAR defines the file location of the deployed JAR files. The corporate server configures the execution environment. And the JVM profile defines the JVM environment variables within CICS. Then, of course, you have your HFS structure and the JNDI naming server that you are using. Please note that the request receiver and the request processor do not have to be in the same CICS region to allow for scalability. Slide 25, please. You must be able to create the vSim data sets that are needed in order to support EJBs in CICS. The first is the EJB request stream directory, CFH-EJ-DIR. Request streams are the task-to-task communication mechanisms used in CICS, which routes the method request for any enterprise beam. So you must define the DSH-EJ-DIR directory, which is a recoverable vSim KSDS file. The EJB object store, our DFH-EJ-OS, contains the stateful session beans that have been passivated, and this is a non-recoupable vSim data set, our coupling facility data table. There's a third data set that you can define, which is the deployed JAR mapping data set, DFH-ADEM. This is used by the KIX Resource Manager for enterprise beams, and it should not be recoverable. And there are sample resource definitions supplied in the group CFH-EJVS for each of these data sets. Slide 27, please. Well, in the HFS structure, there are a few more directories and subdirectories that you must specify in order to support EJBs in the Cobra server files. The first is the chef directory, which is the Cobra server stored deployed JAR files. And the second is the pickup directory, which is where the pickup JARs defined by the DJAR DIR option are located. So you just have to create those directories within your HFS structure. There are some optional directories. Again, if you'd like to run any of the KIX EJB samples, you'll want to copy the samples directory. And if you want to use any of the deployed JAR files, you'll want to create a DJAR directory. And the structure will look similar to the chart as you see here. Slide 29, please. Now to set up the resource definitions. The TCP/IP listener listens and responds to any IOP requests. So you must specify the TCP/IP service definitions, which defines which services are to be supported. And the main things you want to specify on these definitions is the IP port, which the listener will open and listen on, the protocol. In order to use EJB within CICS, this must be specified to IIOP, the TRAN ID, which will be used for the request receiver task. By default, this is CIRR. If you'd like to use any of the security features, such as the secure socket layer on this port, you can specify that here. Or you can specify any of the other security options as well. But the main things you must specify is the IP port number and the protocol and the transaction for the request receiver task. Slide 31, please. The next resource definition you must define is for the request model. The request model is used to decide the transaction name and any other characteristics of the request processor. It basically determines the CICS TRAN ID under which to run the request processor. It is only required if you need to specify a trans ID under which the beam methods will execute other than the default CIRP. Request models are used are matched against IOP requests that are received from the request receiver. And they can match EJB requests, they can match stateless Cobra requests, or they can match both, or they can be generic. If there is no request model definition match found, the KIX will use the default, which maps to CIRP. Within the request model, the things you want to specify are the type. Is it an EJB request, a corporate request, or a generic request? The trans ID, which is to be used for the request processor task. The bean name, which could be generic, but this is the bean name from the XML deployment descriptors. And the interface type, which is either home, remote, or both. Although you can manually define the request models, please note that these definitions can be generated by the deployment tools. Slide 32, please. Before enterprise beans can be deployed into an EJB server, the execution environment must first be configured. And this is done via the Corbis server. A KixEJB server may contain more than one Corbis server. This is because a specific enterprise bean can be deployed multiple times into the same EJB server, but not into the same Corbis server. The two main variables that you must specify within the Corbis server definition, the first is the shelf parameter. And this is the points to the shelf directory, which is the place for CICS to copy user-deployed jar files. And this basically insulates CICS from any changes that may have been made. This directory should not be manipulated by the user. And it contains jar files and a copy of the deployed jar file, and may also contain an IOR for each bean. The second option is the djardir parameter, which is either the pickup directory or the djard directory location. And these directories contain the deployed jar files that you want to install within your region. It's used only for EJB-jar files, and it does support definitions being automatically defined and installed. Slide 33, please. Within the JVM properties file, in order to support EJBs, you must specify the name server that you are using. If you are using the COS naming server or the LDAP naming server, you specify those within the properties file. Please note that for the LDAP server, there are two additional parameters that you must specify. And there are also some security parameters you can specify between CICS and LDAP, which are located in the bottom bullet on the screen. Slide 35, please. The next step is to tailor the CICS startup JCL. Again, you must make sure your CICS region size is large enough and that you have an APF authorized library for SDSJOff included in your step lib. The DSIM data sets that you created in the first step for DFH EJDIR, DFH EJOS, and DFH ADEM, if you're using that, must be defined in the DD statements within the JCL. And within the SIT parameters, you must make sure you have EDSA LIM specified. At a minimum, it's set to 500 meg, but this most likely will not be large enough, so you want to make sure that's set adequately. You must specify TCP/IP equals yes in order to have support for EJBs. Again, max JVM TCBs must be set in order to limit the number of J8 and J9 TCBs within the pool. And you must specify IOP listener equals yes or no in order to let Kix know if it is to function as an IOP listener. If you have a single region EJB server that you're setting up, you must remember that the regions will act as both the listener and the AOR, so you must specify IOP if IOP listener equals yes in the SIP for that region. Slide 36, please. In order to manage and test the beans that you have just defined and installed, you need to install the resource definitions that you just created. Within this slide, it lists out the steps needed to install those definitions if you are utilizing various groups that they're included in. But you basically need to install the TCP/IP service definitions and the request model definitions. And you also need to install the corporate server definitions, which will add the logical server to the II domain. And we'll open the EJB object store data set. Slide 37, please. You must also install the DJAR resource definitions, which define the location of the deployed JAR files. Kix copies the deployed JAR file to the pickup directory of the specified Corbis servers. And there must be an identical DJAR definition installed in each of the AORs of the EJB server. And it is possible to have one or more associated DJAR definition with the Corbis server. When you install the DJAR, it will allow you to read the deployed JAR files from HFS structure. It will allow you to copy the JAR files to the shell. And it will create the bean resource and the bean metadata. And these DJAR files can either be defined manually or they can be defined automatically via the pickup directory mechanism. Slide 38, please. A Kix EJB server may be made up of multiple CICS regions. Up to this point, we have looked at the steps needed in order to set up CICS as a single EJB server region, but it is possible to set it up as a multi-EJB server. And this reduces the impact of a single region failure, and it also enables use of workload balancing and distribution. Basically, what you do is you separate a single region into a listener and AOR region. Within the listener region, you must include the TCP/IP service definitions, you must include the request model definitions, and within the AOR regions, you must include the corporate server definitions, the DJAR definitions, and the request model definitions. In a single region Kix EJB or corporate server, it is acceptable to define DFH EJDIR and DFH EJOS as local files. However, in a multi-region Kix EJB server, DFH EJDIR must be shared by all of the regions, that's all of the listener regions and all of the AORs in the server, and DFH EJOS must be shared by all of the AORs in the server. There are three ways you can enable DFH EJDIR and DFH EJOS to be shared. You can define them as remote files in an FOR, you can define them as coupling facility data tables, or you can define them using vSIM RLS. Slide 40, please. On this slide, we take a brief look at the JNDI server. The JNDI name server is the API that provides the directory and naming functionality to Java applications. And CICS basically supports two main naming servers. The first is the Lightweight Directory Access Protocol service. And the second is the Common Object Request Broker Architecture, Common Object Services Naming Service. And the basic difference between these two is if you're using the COS server, it's easier to install than LDAP. It's easier to write any client programs using COS. And it's provided with Webs for Application Server. Whereas if you're using the LDAP server, the installation is a little more complicated than installing the COS server. But the LDAP server is scalable, it is configurable, and it's a lot more secure. And the LDAP server is provided via IBM SecureWay Directory. And if you'd like more information involving the JNDI servers, there are some additional information in the notes to go into a little more detail. Slide 42, please. This is just a list of some CICS links and documents that you may want to reference in the future. If you get a chance to take a look at them, they have some information that may be helpful when it comes to some Kix-related problems and issues that may come up. And slide 43, please. This chart includes links to a number of sites that provide valuable online resources for Webster products. DeveloperWorks offers in-depth technical information. The events link on support pages points you to webcasts and conference information. Visit WebSphere.org for user group information and more product information. The IBM Education Assistant consists of self-help modules to get new users up to the learning curve quickly. The ESR tool is for Passport Advantage clients to open, update, and view PMRs online. And the My Support link on all product support pages lets you sign up for weekly email updates for products of interest to you. Slide 44, please. That brings us to the end of the session, so I will pass this over to Christy for questions and answers.
Okay. Thank you, Sheila, for a great presentation. At this point, Sheila, we would like to open the lines for questions. I will now turn the call over to our presenter, Sheila Robinson.
And at this time, if you would like to ask a question, please do so by pressing the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touch-tone telephone. And we'll take our first question from Scott Gross, customer, Snyder National. Please go ahead.
There's a number of things that are covered in the presentation, shared class cache, EJBs, and so forth, and says if you're using this or that, but is there anywhere that I can get recommendations, best practices, pros and cons, that kind of thing to help me decide if we should use that feature or not?
At the current moment, there isn't anything documented anywhere. Up to this point, it's usually been mostly trial and error for most customers in order to figure out if they should be using shared class cache and things of that nature. So I guess the answer is no. There's not anything that would sort of give you, a base settings in order to what you should be using or not.
Okay. Another question. Early on, it was mentioned that that the storage needed for the Java is not going to be under the DSA, and that was my understanding. But then later on, when you're talking about EJBs, it was mentioned to have an EDSA limit of at least 500 meg. Is that a difference with EJBs, or when does DSA come into play?
It comes into play more so with the EJBs. If you're just going to be running with Java or JKIC support, it still has it set for your normal KIX applications, but it doesn't come into play as much until you do start involving any of the EJB applications that you'd like to run.
Okay. All right, thanks.
You're welcome.
And we'll take a question from Eileen Barkow, City of New York. Please go ahead.
As I've been trying to set up an LDAP server for CICS and having trouble, first place, supposed to be documented in the Red Book, which is not online. Every other Red Book is online. This one isn't. I can't order it. I was really wondering, according to what I've seen, it looks like you have to use the TDBM option for DB2. You can't just make it backup only. Is that correct?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
Looking at LDAP and just setting up LDAP to use with CICS. And first, like I said, I'm having trouble. I know it's documented in the Red Book, but the Red Book is not online. It looks like it's the only Red Book which is not online. And I can't exactly order the hard copy. And I'm really wondering, it looks like from what I've seen in the documentation, you need to use LDAP, ADAP, or DB2. You cannot make it backup only. Is that correct?
I don't know the exact answer to that off the top of my head right now, but I can look into that and give you a response via email later.
Mm-hmm. So why is it just this Red Book? I forgot the exact name of it. I had the title, CICS and Java or something, where they do describe how to set up LDAP. It only seems to be the only Red Book not available online.
I think I know which Red Book you are talking about.
Yeah.
It's been a while since I actually took a look at that section, but... again, I don't know exactly how to answer that question at this time.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry.
And at this time, we have no further questions from the phone audience. Ms. Snyder, I would like to turn the conference back over to you for any additional or closing remarks.
Okay, thank you, Sheila. So at this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation as well. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will also be announced on this site. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Sheila, for presenting.